We're holding on Mem Dalet Amud Aleph, third line. We discussed yesterday the case where a woman has, we discussed first where there's a ksuba, and the question is, at what point does the shibud of the ksuba come into effect? According to Rashi, it's a more general, when we talk about that the father, we said in the Mishnah, is entitled, appointed of Yehuda in the Mishnah, the father is entitled to his daughter's ksuba, where the kedushin took place when she was still in his rishus. So, at what point does that shibud, at what point does the shibud kick in? Normally, every ksuba has a shibud on it, in the sense that when it comes to collecting the money for the ksuba, the shibud is primarily on the karka of the b'chos, and later on in the Masechta, we'll talk about the details of that. In terms of the Gemara, the shibud was, for the most part, exclusively on his karka. In later times, the Gaonim made a takana that it should be on the metaltalin as well. And in fact, after that, the minhag developed to write in the ksuba explicitly that the shibud is on those as well. And the Rambam points out that was a very good idea, because a takana of the Gaonim, it doesn't necessarily bind the chosin. He can always claim later on, he or his heirs can always claim later on they didn't know of the takana, whereas if they write explicitly in the ksuba that the shibud is on everything, well, then it's clear that it's on everything. The point being that the shibud is on everything means, as usual with any other debt, if he sells some of that real estate later on, then she would, just like any other Baal Chayv, would be able to collect from that, would be able to take away that property from the buyers to satisfy the debt. Then the buyers themselves can go back to the chosin or his heirs and get compensation. That's called achrayus. That's another thing. The point being that, when does that shibud take effect? So we said, Rav Huna had said that the basic amount of the ksuba takes place at the time of the erusin. So any property that he sells after the erusin will be under the lien to pay off that ksuba. If there's a tosfos, if you add an extra in that ksuba, then that will take effect only from the time of Nisuin. And then we said, Rav Asi had said both parts take effect only from the Nisuin. Rashi had seemed to say that this applies more generally. When does the shibud of the ksuba take effect? Tosfos had said that maybe it's specifically about the case where the erusin took place when she was a tana, and then the nisuin took place after she was a begeras. So then the question would be, at what point does the shibud take effect? Given that between the erusin and the nisuin, she left her father's rishus anyway by becoming a begeras. Anyway, so we mentioned in that connection a case where she has two ksubas in her hands, one of which shows more money in it than the other. So Rav Huna had said it means that the second one has a larger amount. The first one is 200, the second is 300. Clearly, it's not meant to be, the Gemara said, that both of them are in effect, and therefore she should get 500. What it means is, that in effect, by giving her two ksubas, what he's saying is, the second one has an advantage in that there's more money in it, but the first one has an advantage in that the shibud began earlier. So if he would have sold property between the dates of the first and the second one, then only if she wants to use that first one and collect 200 would she be able to collect from those properties that had been sold between the date of the first one and the second one. So now the Gemara says, let's discuss that further. Omamar, so we said, Rav Huna had said, Iboya Bahai Gavya, Iboya Bahai Gavya. So we said that Rav Huna had said that she can collect with either one. The question is, Lema Pliga de Rav Nachman. Do we have to say then that necessarily that Rav Huna, with that statement, is arguing on Rav Nachman? The Omar of Nachman, namely, Rav Nachman says, in a similar case, Shnei Shtoris Hayotzim Bazaar Hazeh, suppose that it's not two ksubas. Rav Nachman talks about a case where you have two shtaris about the sale of the same field or the gift of the same field. So Reuven writes, so there's two shtaris where Reuven somehow transferred ownership of this field to Shimon, whether by sale or by gift. One of them has one date. The other one has a later date. So let's say Rashi says one in Nissan, one in Sivan. So Rav Nachman says Bitol Sheni Es Harishon. The second one overrides the first one. So therefore, since the shtar, now a shtar of sale usually has a chrayus in it, meaning that, and then actually elsewhere, the Gemara talks about that even if a chrayus wasn't written, then it's considered as though it was written. Only if he says explicitly there isn't, then there isn't. A chrayus is basically exactly that, insurance. It means that the seller, Reuven, saying to Shimon, in case in the future some creditor of mine should come and take this field away from you to satisfy my debt, then the achrayus is that I promise that I'm agreeing to compensate you the value of this field. So I sold you this field for 100. Later on, a Baal Chayv is going to take it away from you because I owe him 100. Then I'm going to compensate you that 100 so you don't end up losing out. So now, sort of Nachman says that in this case, when you have two shtaris on the same field of the shtaris of sale or of gift or whatever, then if there's a chrayus in it and they take it away from him, then when there's a chrayus, then Shimon is entitled to collect from Reuven, and not only from Reuven's Bnei Chorin, he can also collect from Reuven's Mishabadim, from other fields that Reuven meanwhile will have sold. So if you have, in a regular case of a sale of a field, Reuven sells the field to Shimon in Nissan, Tavshin Pei Beis, let's say, he writes for him achrayus. If now in Sivan of Tavshin Pei Beis, a creditor of Reuven comes and takes away that field, so now Shimon himself has a shibud on Reuven as a result of that, and therefore he can go back to any field that Reuven sold any time from Nissan onward and collect his own debt from that, from yet a third party, from Levi.
At what price does he have to be compensated? At the initial price? Or the present price, let's say this 10 years or 20 years after he buys the field and someone comes and claims it, what's the compensation price?
So the Gemara talks about that in the first perek of Bava Metzia. If I remember correctly, he is entitled to the current price, but not all of it from the Shabbatim. The original price he could get from the Shabbatim, the rest he would have to get from the Chosim Nechorin, meaning only property that's in Reuven's possession right now would he be able to collect from, but I'm not actually sure about that. Anyway, the point is that the point is now in our scenario, you have two documents of sale on this field. One dated Nissan, one dated Sivan. Then Rav Nachman is saying the second one overrides the first in the sense that now, if later on a creditor of Reuven comes and takes away the field from Shimon, then Shimon is still going to be able to collect from Reuven and Shabbatim, but not all the way back to Nissan, only back to Sivan. Any fields that Reuven had sold between Nissan and Sivan are out of Shimon's reach at this point. So Nachman is saying that one overrides the other, whereas Rav Huna had said in the case of the Ksuvus that one doesn't override the other, that we say that each one has its validity, the first one of 200 zuz from the first date, and the second one of 300 zuz, meaning that the extra 100 zuz, the shibud of it, is as of the second date. So does that mean that they're arguing? So the Gemara says, not necessarily. Lav mi itman Allah, because don't you know that was said about that, Amar Papa, Umoyer Rav Nachman di Osif de Dikla, that Rav Nachman does agree that if the second shtar includes even one extra tree, then it means that he wrote it in order to add something for the seller, not to override, not to be mevatel the first one, but to add to it. So it would be similar. So Rashi learns that it would be similar then to Rav Huna's din in the sense that again, you know, so now Shimon can use either shtar. If he wants to, if now this field together with the tree was taken away from him, then he has a choice. He can either use the first shtar, and then he's entitled to go after any property that Reuven sold from the time of the first shtar to collect the achrayus. Or he could use the second shtar, which includes also the fact that Reuven promised achrayus for the tree, and therefore now he has the ability to do that, but he'd only be able to do from the time of the second shtar. So it doesn't override it, just it gives him a different alternative, which is basically the same thing as Rav Huna had said with the Ksuvos. The Rashba learns a little differently and says that actually it doesn't even have to mean that, in that case, it doesn't even have to mean that the Shibud, as far as the second one, only begins from the date of the second Shtar. It means that he can kind of use both Shtaris together in tandem to say that he sold me also the tree and that the Achrayus is on it as well. So Hachanami, Ha'osif Lamidi. The same thing you could say in the case of Ksumas. He's adding something in the second one. He's adding an extra 100 zuz. Therefore, so if it had been, if both Ksumas said the same amount, 200 zuz, then yeah, you would say it means that the one overrides the other and the shibud of the Ksuba begins only from the date of the second one. But now that the second one adds something to the first one, so Rav Huna is saying it means that she can use either one or the other. And Rav Nachman is saying the same thing in the case of shtaris of sale for a field. So they're not necessarily all. Okay. So the Gemara says Gufa. So let's analyze Rav Nachman's statement a little. Amar Rav Nachman, Shnei Shtaris Hayotim Bezeh Hazeh Bitul Sheni Yisalishin. If the two Shtaris are one after the other, different dates, then the second one does override the first one. And that's what we said, that's what we're talking about if there's nothing else added in the second one. So they both describe the exact same field, and the only difference between them is the date. Then we say it means that the second one, that the shibud begins only as of the date of the second one. So it means in our scenario over here that if Shimon later on has the field taken away from him, then and by the way, Achrayus could be not just that it's taken away because of one of Reuven's creditors. It could also be, for example, it's taken away from him, because somebody else comes and claims that the field is his and claims that Shimon never bought it from Reuven in the first place. So in that case, Shimon normally would take out his shtar and show that it was, but let's say either he doesn't have his shtar anymore and he doesn't have a chazaka, or he has his shtar and evidence is brought and based in that it's forged, et cetera, there could be all kinds of scenarios where the field is taken away from Shimon for some valid legal reason, and then in that case, the achrayus clause kicks in, and he can go back to Reuven and demand satisfaction, and that he has a shibud on. And again, so we're saying if there's two shtaris, then the shibud of the second one overrides the first one, so he can only collect from property that Reuven sold after Sivan, which is the date of the second shtar. So now, Amar Rav Papa, so we said that Rav Papa said of Moedid of Nachman, the Yosef Be'dikla, the Tosfos Kasei, that Rav Nachman agrees that if he wrote in even one extra palm tree, then it means that he's adding it for Tosfos. He's not adding it to override the first shtar completely, but to say that the shibud for the different parts of the sale kicks in at different times. So if he wants to use the first shtar, then he has the earlier shibud, and if he wants to use the second shtar, then he has the later shibud. And again, according to the Rashba, it's slightly different. Anyway, so the Gemara continues. Let's go further into that. Let's consider what the nature of these two shtaris might be. Now, of course, there could be a shtar on a field, could be where you're selling it, or it could also be where you're gifting it. So, and each one kind of has an advantage over the other. So pshita rishin b'mecha b'sheni b'matana. So it's obvious if the first one, let's say that there's no extra tree in the second one or anything like that, but the first one is written as a bill of sale and the second one is written as a matana. So then there's no question that the second one is meant in order to improve the position of Shimon, so therefore he's not being mevatel the first one. It means the yapas koichu depositly. He wrote him out the second one as phrased as a gift in order to make his position stronger. Mishum dinah de bar mitzvah, namely that he helps him as far as the din of bar mitzvah. The din of bar mitzvah is discussed mainly in Bav Metzia. If in a regular case when Reuben is selling property, and he sells it to Shimon, Levi, who has a neighboring field, who has a field that adjoins the field that was just sold to Shimon, has the right to come to Beis Din and say, you know what, I would like to buy that field instead, and it would be va'asisa ha'yoshev ha'tov, it would be what's doing what's good and what's right, as the Pasuk phrases it, because then that way I'll have one contiguous field and it'll be much easier to take of, to take care of. And that's a valid claim in Beis Din, and therefore he has the right to tell Shimon, you know what, Shimon, here, take the value of the field that you paid, take the money that you paid for the field, and sell me the field instead. I have first rights on it. And the result is that Levi ends up with the field, and now he has two contiguous fields, which is much easier to take care of. So that's the din of Bar Metzra. Now the Gemara there in Bava Metzia discusses a bunch of cases where the din of Bar Metzra doesn't apply, and one of them is where he received it as a gift. So it's one thing when Shimon is buying the field, then Levi can tell him, listen, it's almost like midas sdoim for you not to sell it to me. To you, it doesn't really make a difference whether you have a field here or there. You could just as well buy a field someplace else. Me, I have reason that I want after this field because it's next to mine. And that would be a valid claim. Whereas when Shimon receives it as a gift, then obviously that doesn't really apply. He received it as a gift. It's not like Shimon has the ability to go and tell Reuven, you know what, I don't want this gift. I want it someplace else. So now, if Shimon is holding a document that says that Shimon that Reuven gifted him the property, then that makes it now that he's immune to the claims of the Bar Metzra. So therefore, that puts him in a better position. So therefore, we can say that Reuven wrote that second document not in order to weaken Shimon's position and make it that the shibud begins for him only later, but on the contrary, in order to strengthen his position and make it that now he'll be immune to the claim of the Bar Metzra. Now, with that said, Tosfos points out that what he would have to do, the fact is, if he did bring both shtaris to Beis Din, then Levi, the neighbor, would say, you know what, obviously this is being done only as a trick to get out against me. It's very obvious you bought the field and the guy just wrote you a second shtar to pretend that it's a matana. I still want to demand my rights as Bar Metzra. So we'd have to be talking about, Tosfos says, where Shimon is actually going to take the first shtar, the shtar of sale, and hide it and pretend that he never received it and bring out only the shtar of matana. We're not saying that it would be an ethical thing to do. The fact of the matter is that the fact of the matter is he is taking away rights from Levi in a way that he shouldn't really be doing. And if Beis Din finds out about it, Pashtos, then they can impose some sanctions on him or whatever for it. But if they don't find out, then Shimon, if Shimon may be able to get away with it, if he only brings out the shtar of matana, then he'll be immune to Levi's claim of Bar Metzra. So therefore, we could say that might be why Reuven wrote him out a document of matana. Tosfos does say, though, that actually maybe even where Bar Metzra doesn't apply, and the Gemara in Bava Metzia there mentions a whole bunch of cases where it doesn't, nevertheless, we could still say that the shtar matana is there for a different purpose. It gives him certain rights that he otherwise wouldn't have had in terms of an easement to the property. And different poskim in Shulchan Aruch and in Nosa Kalin, it discusses the ins and outs of that. Maybe not necessarily, because we would say that because we might not need that. Lahalacha, when he sells a property, we assume that an easement is sold along with it as well. A lot of times. So that's if the first shtar was for mecher, was for sale, and the second one is for matana, then we can say he wrote it not in order to weaken Shimon's claim, but on the contrary, in order to strengthen Shimon's claim and make it that now he's immune to claims of Bar Metzra. On the other hand, the Choshek and Rishin b'Matani, the Sheni b'Mecher, and then how much more so if the first one was a gift and the second one is a sale has an advantage. Dan Rinnan, Mishum Dinah de Baal Choyv, who the cost of Cain. We can say that he wrote the second one in order to indemnify him against the Baal Choyv. Because after all, if Reuven is giving Shimon the property as a gift, normally If then Levi comes and takes away the property from Shimon because Reuven owes him money, if it was a gift, Shimon usually doesn't have much recourse. What's he going to do? Go back to Reuven and say, you know what? You have to compensate me because the gift that you gave me turned out to be no good. What do you mean? There's no achrayus on a gift. You got a gift. You got free money. If it got taken away from you, okay, easy come, easy go. What do you want from me? So therefore we could say that maybe what Reuven does is he writes out to Shimon another document that says that there's a sale, and a sale comes with a high, with a price. In fact, elsewhere, the Gemara talks about, Maram Shif points out over here that, that even if it doesn't actually say Achrayus in the second one, generally speaking, Achrayus is assumed in a sale. Unless it explicitly says no Achrayus, then he's entitled. So therefore we can say that what we did is, so Reuven wrote him out a document of, a document that he's gifting in the field. Then he wrote him out a second document to say that he sold it to him, and includes it in Achrayus, and that way Shimon is safe, and that way even if the property is taken away from Shimon, then he has recourse against Reuven. So in such cases, we would say that Rav Nachman's din of the first one, of the second one, overriding the first one, wouldn't apply because in each of those cases, the second one has an advantage over the first one, as far as Bar Mitzvah or as far as Achrayus, respectively. So Ella, each name of the Mecha, Shneim Matana, but we're saying that both of them are bills of sale, or both of them are bills of gift. Then we're saying that the second one, or Bitol Sheni Yisarishin, then the second one overrides the first one, and we're saying that if there's a shibud at all, then it takes effect only as of the second one. So my timer. Why is that? What's the logic? Why would he do that anyway? What would be the point of writing a second shtar on the same field just in order to be mevatel the shibud for a later date? Why would anybody do such a thing? Or why would the lekeach? Why would Shimon even accept such a thing? So the answer is Raf Ramama Ema Oduye Oduye. So Rav Nachman says because it's possible. Let's say that Shimon who has the shtar admits to Reuven that this shtar was actually that the original shtar that I'm holding that shows that I bought this field from you is actually forged. So he demands from but he says to Reuven, the fact is you did sell me the field. The shtar itself may be forged, but I do want a valid shtar that I can use in the future as a proof that I own this field. So I want you to write me a second shtar. Fine, I'm willing to accept that I won't have the shibud as of the first date of the first shtar because there was something wrong with that shtar because I myself agree that the shtar was forged. But at least I want a second one, and fine, I'm willing to accept a shibud that began later. Rav Acha says a different reason, that it could be that he was moichel, it doesn't have to be that he's saying that the shtar was forged per se, but he's just saying that I was moichel, he just says I'm moichel on my shibud. So if he bought the property, so fine, he's willing to say in this case, that I'm willing to forego my shibud from the date of the original shtar. I'm willing to accept the shibud that begins only later. So I'm willing to accept. I'm willing to accept the second shtar that's dated later. Now, what would be the so Tosfos explained. Let's say now let's draw out the case in a little more detail. Let's say that Shimon has a document showing that in Nissan Reuven gifted him this field. Now in Io he went and bought another field next to that one. Now he's saying, I'm willing to be moichel on my shibud from the first one, write me out a second shtar matana. The point is that he's saying that he's willing to forego his rights as bar mitzvah because now, where Reuven bought another field. So now, Shimon is saying, I'm willing to accept a shtar that's dated later, meaning I won't have a claim of bar mitzvah against you, Reuven, that you bought a field next to mine, because I'll be holding a shtar matana that says that I received my field only in Sivan. Also, Tosfos talks about there's also nachminas as far as the shibud, as far as when his own Balei Choyves can collect from that field and about Peiros and so forth. So the Gemara says, "My benai, what's the practical difference between these two reasons?" And the answer is, "Ikka benai roi sadi." First of all, a nafkamina would be, is he saying that these edim are false edim? According to Rav Ram's reason, where he's saying that the first shtar is forged, meaning, in other words, that he's saying that the signatures of the edim on there are the edim signed on a forged shtar. So therefore, according to him, it comes out that those edim are possible edim. Tosfos says, one second, on his say so, you're going to possible edim. No, what Tosfos says is what it means is that if this Shimon has any other shtar that is signed by those edim, then he's in effect saying that that other shtar is no good as well. The other possibility, Tosfos says he's not baffling the edim themselves, but he's saying when he admits that the first shtar is forged, he means the signatures are forged as well. These are not the signatures of those actual edim. So now, according to Rafram's reason, that would apply. According to Rav Acha's reason, that he's just being moichel on the shibud and willing to accept the shibud from a later time, then that wouldn't apply. Why, by the way, what would be the logic why he'd be willing to accept the shibud that begins only later? The Rosh explains, let's say he found out afterwards that before the first shtar was written, Reuven had made a moidah. Now, the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra, you could have a case where Reuven is being pressured or forced into selling or gifting a field to Shimon, and therefore what he does is he wants to be able to have rights to later on contest it in Beis Din. So ahead of time, he goes in front of Edim and makes a formal declaration to them called a Moedah, saying that I'm not selling this field willingly, I'm being forced to sell it, and eventually I plan to take him to Beis Din and exercise my rights. So now, later on, when he sells or gifts the field, then if those edim come in and tell Beis Din about that moedah, then yeah, they'll say that the sale or the gift is batel and will unwind things. So now, let's say Shimon finds out that there was a moedah on this field, so he goes and talks it over with Reuven, the seller, and eventually they agree, you know what, fine, Reuven says, fine, you know, I'll be mevatel my moedah. And Shimon says, okay, then you know what, in that case, I'm willing to accept the shtar written as of now that will give me fuller rights over the field rather than trying to use the original shtar where your edim of moedah are going to come and say that that one's batel because of your moedah. So that would be a reason why he might be willing to be moedah on the shibud from the first time, and that's what Rav Acha is saying. So again, so if he admits that the shtar is forged, then it would come out that he's saying that the edim, or at least those signatures, are possible. According to Rashi, it sounds like he's saying the edim are possible for everybody. According to Tosfos, he's saying that at most the edim are possible for him in the future if he has any other shtaris written by them. Whereas according to Rav Acha's reason, that wouldn't apply. Another nafkamina, or the shalumi peri, another nafkamina would be as far as paying for payers. If Shimon, the buyer of the field, had payers, eight payers from the field between the dates of the first and the second shtaris, according to Rafram, he would have to compensate Reuven for those because he's saying that he never bought the field to begin with in Nissen because he admits that his shtar is forged. Whereas according to Rav Acha, all he's saying is as far as the shibud, as far as the achrayus that on this field, I'm willing to have it start only in Sivan, but the fact is I did buy the field of Nissen and the fruit that I ate was mine and I don't have to pay back for it. And a third nafkamina would be, or a taska, a third nafkamina would be as far as who pays the property taxes on it, between Nissen and Sivan. According to Rafram, it would come out as a result of saying that the shtar is forged. The result is the field wasn't sold in Nissen yet. Therefore, any property taxes that were due on the field between Nissen and Sivan are going to have to be paid by Reuven. According to Ramacha's reason, they'd be paid by Shimon because the sale or the gift did actually take place in Nissen. So to summarize then, so if Shimon is holding two shtaris on the same field, so we're saying like this, if the second shtar adds something to the first shtar, then both shtaris are valid, and each one has its detail that he can use it for, one for the Uliyah Achrayus and one for the extra thing that's included in it. If one is a gift and the other is a sale, or vice versa, then again, both of them are valid, and he can use whichever one will benefit him more in a given case, as far as Bar Mitzvah, or as far as Achrayus, as the case may be. If both of them are exactly the same, than the second one, overrides the first one, and was saying that, and was saying in effect we could be saying either that either because he's moida that the first one is forged, or because he's saying that I'm willing to be moichel my shibud as of the first date and accept the shibud only of the second date, and therefore these various nafkaminas would apply to that. So now let's go back. We got into this discussion about two shtaris on the same field by way of talking about the question as far as ksuba. We said the question is that the original question at the beginning of the sugya was that at what point does the shibud of the ksuba take effect? So we said Rav Huna had said that as far as the basic amount of the ksuba, it takes effect as of the erusin. And if there's any tosfos, if there's any additional amount written in the ksuba, then that takes effect only as of the nisuin. Whereas Rav Asi had said that all of it takes place only as of the nisuin. So the question is, my havi alod ksuba? What's the bottom line? What's the halacha in that case of ksuba? So Toshma, the Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, Mishum Rebbe Loza Rebbe Shimon, Monim Osayim Min Ha'Erisim V'Toysus Min Ha'Nisurin. It's actually Machlok Kesanoim. Rebbe Loza Rebbe Shimon says that the 100 or the 200 takes effect as of the Erisin, and the Toysus takes effect only as of the Nisurin. So her Shibud for that extra amount is going to begin only from the Nisurin. V'chamem, Echadzeva Echadzeva Min Ha'Nisurin, V'cham said both of them is only from the Nisurin. Which, in Mephoshim point out, I think the Ritva points out, the Gemara evidently did not know of this Braisa until now, otherwise it would have brought it in before. When we first had Rav Huna and Rav Asi discussing this, we would have said that, we would have said, are we saying that they're arguing like Machlokes Tanoim? So now we know that in fact they are. The Hilchasa and the bottom line Allah, Echadzeb and Nisuin, both of them take effect only at Nisuin. There's no Shibur of Ksuba that begins back at the Erosin, even for the 100 or 200. Okay. So now the next Mishnah and the next couple of Mishnayos are going to be talking about a whole new topic. From here until the middle of Daf Mem Vav, we're going to be talking about a topic called Motzi Shema. So the Pasuk talks about it in Parashas Ki Seitze, a few Psukim before Onus and the Fata that we talked about until now. So the Torah describes it as follows. A couple gets married. The husband comes to Beis Din with Tainas Besulim, which we learned about in the first parak. He's saying that I didn't find my wife a Besula. Now, in the first parak, we talk about he's saying I didn't find her a Besula, and he's saying that in terms of the Ksuba, he's saying I shouldn't have to pay a Ksuba at all because it was a Mekach Tos, or she wasn't a Besula and I shouldn't be on the hook for a Ksuba of 200 Zuz, only 100, because he's saying either she was a Mukas Eitz, or actually she may be claiming she's a Mukas Eitz. He's saying she may have had relations before we ever were Nisaris, or maybe he is claiming that she's a Mukas Eitz, or whatever it is. The point is he's saying she's not a Besula. But now you have with the Torah describes where he's saying not only he's saying she's not a Besula, but he's saying I have evidence that that is because after the Erisin and before our Nisurin, so when she's already an Eishes Ish, she was Mizan. Now, so what happens? So we have to, as usual, we have to have Eidim. If it turns out that it's true, actually the Pasuk phrases it first in terms of what happens if it's false. So the Pasuk goes on to say that her parents come to Beis Din with evidence against him. And they say that this is a false accusation. In fact, I have proof to the contrary. The Pasuk phrases it, they spread out the garment in front of the Ziknei Eir. We're going to talk about later on Daf Mem Vav, that doesn't mean literally that they spread out a garment. Where it sounds almost like it means they take a sheet with blood on it and use that as evidence that she was in fact a Besula. We're going to see on Daf Mem Vav that that's not exactly what it means. It means that they bring evidence that his claim is false, that she was a Besula, or that if she wasn't a Besula, it wasn't the result of Znus, whatever the case. Then the Pasuk says the Pasuk says there are three consequences for him. He gets Malkus. He has to pay a fine of 100 Sloim, which is twice the amount that the Onus and the Fata pay, and he's never allowed to divorce her. So actually it's interesting. There's a Mishnah in Erchin that points out that the fact that he pays a fine of 100 zuz, which is twice what an onus or a mafata pays, shows the seriousness of Lashon Hara. An onus or mafata does an actual action. He actually, he actually rapes or seduces the girl, and we're saying we make him pay only 50 zloim for that. Okay, plus boshes and pagam and whatever, but still, the basic amount that he's paying is 50. Whereas here, he's motzi shemra, he's only saying that she did wrong, and therefore, and we're fining him double, and he's paying 100 zloim. Which the Gemara points out over there, that it's not, now there is the fact that if his accusation is true, she's going to be put to death, as we're going to go on to say, but still, the way the pasuk phrases it shows that the 100 itself is a punishment for his lashon hara. The fact that he gets malchus is more for the fact that he was trying to bring false edim that would have her put to death. The Rambam and the Ramban, the Rambam and Moreh Nevuchim and the Ramban and his Pirush on the pasuk point out there's another angle on it as well. In effect, what he's trying to do is deprive her of the ksuba that he would have normally had to pay. If he married her as a ksuba, he would have to pay her a ksuba usually of 200 zuz, which is 50 shkalim. He was trying to illegally deprive her of that. Therefore, we treat him, in effect, like a ganav. A ganav pays double, therefore so does he. Therefore, he's paying 100 zloim instead of 50. Anyway, that's the first possibility. Then the pasuk goes on to say, if it turns out that his edim were correct, and there is in fact, and that she was in fact mizana during the erusin, then we take her and we give her skila, and that skila, now normally an eshes ish is mizana, she'd get chenek, here we upgrade her punishment all the way to skila, and that skila takes place, al pesach beis aviyah, it takes place in front of the door of her father's house. Normally skila would take place someplace outside the city, but here instead they do it right there inside the city in front of her father's house. The point being, we're going to learn later on in the Gemara, it's meant to humiliate her parents. Look what a kind of daughter you raised that she did such a depraved thing. Anyway, so now on Mishnah, and the next Mishnah after it are going to talk about and the Gemara on them until the middle of Daf Mem Vav are going to talk about the ins and outs of these din. I guess it is just the one Mishnah. It's the one Mishnah with the Gemara on it until Mem Vav on the base. So the Mishnah starts off. Hagiyoris chenis gaira bita ima vizinsa. Suppose that a woman became a giyoris and her daughter was this gaira along with her. So in other words, the daughter was conceived and born when her mother was still a goita. And now she converted, even as a little girl, even if she was, so if she was converted at the age of over 3, then we say there's no chazaka that she's a basula anyway. The goyim are promiscuous and she may well have lost her basulim. But even if she was nisgaya at the age of under 3, where then we say she has a chazaka of being a basula, because even if something had happened before that, the basulim would grow back. Nevertheless, she's still not considered, as the pasuk phrases it, bas Yisrael. So therefore, these dinim don't apply. Harezu b'chenek, if it turns out that the accusation was true and she was mizana during her erusin, then she gets chenek, the regular punishment for an eshes ish who is mizana. Eila loy pesach beis ha'av loy me'asela, the din that the punishment takes place in front of her father's house. And the din that the husband, that if the husband was accusing her falsely, that he pays the, and specifically that the edim was zoimim in, as we're going to learn later on in the Gemara, that he should have to pay the hundred selah, none of that applies in this case, because she's not bas Yisro, because she's a giyoris. Tosfos points out, I mean, you don't really have to say that her mother was nisgaya with her. Obviously, the same din would apply if the girl was nisgaya on her own. But practically speaking, a girl that young is not going to be nisgaya on her own. It's going to be that her mother is nisgaya and she goes along with her. Also, Tosfos points out, since the next part of the Mishnah is going to distinguish where the case where she was conceived when her mother was a goita and born after her mother converted, where there necessarily we have to talk about the mother, so therefore in the Reisha we also mention the mother even though it wasn't really necessary. Okay, so that's case number one. Case number two, Hoysa Hayrasa Shalevik Dusha Velaydasabik Dusha. What about if the girl was conceived not in Kedusha and born in Kedusha, meaning that her mother became a giyoris when she was pregnant with her? So now, by the time she was born as a Jewish girl, but she wasn't conceived as a Jewish girl. So then, Hareza with Skila, then the din of Skila does apply, as we're going to learn in the Gemara. So then we don't say that she gets chenek like a regular Eshes Ish. Then the special din of Skila for Naira Mairasa, who was Mizana, does apply. But the Emma Pes Loy Pesach Besav Loy Meisela. But the fact that it's done in front of her father's house, or the fact that her husband should have to pay the 100 Sela if he accused her falsely, that wouldn't apply. That wouldn't apply, as we'll see in the Gemara. And the third case, Hoisa Hirosh Veleidasa Bekdusha, if she was conceived and born in Kedusha, so her mother was a Giyonis, and her mother became a Giyonis before she was ever conceived, Harei Kabasi Yisrael, Chod Bereha, then she's like a Basi Yisrael for all purposes, even though her mother was not herself born as a Jew, but because her mother converted and became a Jew before this girl was conceived, then therefore she's considered like a Basi, a full-fledged Basi Yisrael, therefore, then all the dinim would apply. Skila and Pesach Beis Av and the 100 Sela if her husband was lying. What about another case? Yeshla Av, the Emla Pesach Beis Av. What about if she has a father, but her father doesn't have a door of his house? So let's say the father is homeless, let's say. Or for that matter, a house for this purpose, as usual in halacha, a house has to be defined as a place 4x4 amos. So let's say the father has a house, but the house is smaller than that, so it's not considered a house in halacha. Or yesh la pesach beis av ve'ein la av, or vice versa. What if she has a pesach beis av but no father? So her father had passed away. So his house is still standing, but he himself is gone. So either way, I raise the skila. Either way, she still does get the skila. So you don't do it in front of Pesach Beis Av, but never Pesach Beis Av Elo Mitzvah. When it says that it takes place in front of her father's door, that's only the ideal way to do the mitzvah, but nevertheless, the mitzvah is still accomplished even if there's no father or even if there's no father's door. Sometimes we say where detail in the pasuk is meant to be ma'akiv, and if you don't have that detail, then it doesn't apply. But here we don't say that. Here we say it's not ma'akiv, it's just the usual way would be that we do that, but if there's no father or there's no Pesach Beis Av, then the rest of the dinim still apply. Okay. So the Gemara starts off, Menohani Mili. This that we said in the second case of the Mishnah, that so the first case of the Mishnah where she was where she was born a goita and afterwards converted, it's easy enough to understand why the special dinim of Motzi Shemra don't apply, because the pasuk says that the pasuk uses the expression Bas Yisrael. So she's not a Bas Yisrael because she's a Geyaris. The third case of the Mishnah where she was conceived and born as Yisraelis is also not that much of a chiddush. Because sure, by the time she was conceived, she was conceived as a Bas Yisrael. But we're saying in the middle case of the Mishnah, where she was conceived when her mother was a goita and born after her mother had converted, so then we said, skila she gets, but the rest of the dinim don't apply. Why is that? Menahani Mili, how do we know that? After all, the pasuk says the Yisrael, so maybe none of the dinim should apply unless she was conceived and born as a Yisraelis. Why are we saying that skila applies, but the other ones do not? And the answer is Amar Ish Lakish, the Amar Kro Umesa Lurabis Herasa Shalai Bikdusha Valedasa Bikdusha. Because the Pasuk said, when the Pasuk phrases it, the Pasuk talks about what happens if a husband's accusation is true and his Edom were testifying correctly that she was Mizana during the Erusin, then the Pasuk says we take her to Pesach Beis Aviyah and we give her Skila Vamesa and she dies. Now that's extra, of course, if you give her skill, she's gonna die. So therefore, that word, Vamesa, Lurabis, Harasa, Shalai Bikdusha, Valedasa Bikdusha, that comes to include also this case where she was conceived when her mother was a goita and born when her mother was already a Giyonis. So even in that case, we still have the skilla and the Vamesa. Okay, the Gemara says, well then, why don't the rest of the dinim in that section apply? The dinim that if the husband's accusation was false, if his edim were edim zomimin, then we should say that he should have to pay the 100 Sela and he should get Malkus. Why are we saying the Mishnah had said those don't apply in this case? Why, actually, the Mishnah hadn't clearly said about the Malkus. The Mishnah had just said about the 100 Sela. There is, in fact, some discussion about that, whether in fact we say, in some of the cases where he's not paying the 100, do we say that he gets Malkus on? Do we say that he gets Malkus? The Shittim Kubetzis talks about that and says that in fact maybe he wouldn't get anything. Oh, actually, later on, further down on the Omud, we're going to talk about a case where we're going to have a machlokes about that. So there we'll talk a little bit about that. Or there are cases maybe where he's paying the 100 but not getting malchus. So we'll talk about that soon. Anyway, in our case over here, where she was conceived when her mother was a goita and born when her mother was a geodas, we're saying the skila she gets, because we're learning from the word vamesa, but we're saying the 100 sela and the malchus for her husband, if it was false, doesn't happen. Why not? And the answer to it is omakru vamesa, because where are we learning from the extra word vamesa, meaning lamisa nisrab sevlelik nas. She's included in these dinim only as far as nisa, but not as far as the knas. Okay, so the Gemara says ve'ema l'rabes herosav le'dasa b'kusha. So why? Maybe say that the vamesa is not telling us the case where she was conceived when her mother was a goita. Maybe say it's talking about the case where her mother was a geyoris. And the point is that the pasuk is telling us a chidush, that even though her mother was a geyoris, nevertheless we still call her bas Yisrael. Ryan says, you don't need a pasuk for that. Hayi Yisraelis mal yisrael. She's a full-fledged Jew. She was conceived even as a Jew. There's no, we wouldn't need any ribui in the pasuk for it. Obviously she, the same dinim would apply to her as any other Jewish girl. The fact that her mother is a geyoris rather than a born Jew would be neither here nor there. Well, the Gemara asks, ve'ema l'rabbis herosu v'legasa shalai v'kusha. Maybe on the contrary, maybe say, that the word vamesa is including the first case of the Mishnah, where she was born a geyoris and where she was born a goita and became a geyoris after that. And the answer is in Ken, Yisroel Mayahani. Like, the fact is, the pasuk does say Yisroel. We have to learn something from that. So in other words, if on the one hand we have the pasuk Yisroel implying that she has to be a full-fledged Jewish girl, on the other hand, we have the pasuk vamesa implying that there's an extra case where she gets the skila, then we have to say that putting that together, the extra case has to be where we can call her Bisrael, namely because she was born as a Jewish girl, just not conceived as one, and the vamesa is telling us that nevertheless she gets skila. So therefore, that yields the three possibilities in our Mishnah. If she became a geyoris after she was born, then none of these didn't apply at all. If on the other hand, her mother became a geyoris before she was ever conceived, then all the dinim apply. And if in the intermediate case where she was conceived when her mother was a goita and born after her mother was a geyoris, then we say skila applies because of the extra word vamesa, but the rest of the dinim don't apply because it says visra. Okay. Another case, Amr Rav Yosef bar Hanina, Hamotzi Shemra ala Yisoma Potter. If he's Motzi Shemra on a girl who is an orphan, then he would be Potter. If it turns out that his accusation was false, then he'd be Potter. Shenemer v'nosnu la'aviyah naira, because the pasuk says that he should give the money to the father of the girl, prapazu she'in la'av. So that would be as opposed to this case over here, she doesn't have a father. So therefore he'd be Potter from that. Now the Shittim Ukubetzes talks about maybe he would still be Chayev Malchus, and Rabbi Akiva Eger asks on that on the face of it maybe the two of them should go together, and in fact the Meshech Chochma says that the Meshech Chochma talks about that they do. On the other hand, the Gemara in Erchin that talks about this maybe seems to go against that, because the Gemara says over there that you have the 100 sela versus the malchus are for two different things. On the one hand, he was trying to make a chayiv misa. For that, he gets falsely. For that, he gets malchus. On the other hand, he spoke lashon hara. For that, he's paying the 100 sela, implying that those two could go separately, like the Shittim Ukubetzes says, and not that one necessarily depends on the other. Okay. Anyway, so Rav Yosef of Hanina is saying that he's potter. So prapazu she'in la'av, where she doesn't have a father, then the concept of knas wouldn't apply. The Gemara says, Mosti Rav Yosef ba'ovin, v'itame Rav Yosef ba'zvida. Rav Yosef ba'ovin, or some say Rav Yosef ba'zvida, said, I have a contradiction on that. A braisa says, the braisa is referring to the case of mefater, which we've talked about in the previous perek at the beginning of our perek. The pasuk says, v'imoin yimoin avia. The pasuk says, if her father refuses. So we said in the case of mefata, we said that the mefata, if he marries her, then he's potter from knas, then he just writes her out of ksuba. But we said, if her father refuses, or she refuses, for him to marry her, then instead he pays the knas. So what's the extra ma'in yamain? So it means that we learned in the previous perek that it means that either she or her father can turn down the marriage, But we're saying the rabbis Yisrael Melaknas, the Rabbi Yosef Levi. Rabbi Yosef Levi says it comes to include that even an orphan girl gets the knas. So it means whether her father is alive and he's the one who's refusing to agree to the marriage, or her father's dead and she herself refuses to get married to this guy. So we see that even now, Rashi explains like this. By the onus, it says that he gives the money to the father of the girl. And as we learned previously, we learn many dinim of onus and the fata one from the other using a gzeira shavah. So the same way as we would say that the knas is payable in the case of onus, even though her father is dead, we would say the same thing as far as mefata, that the knas ought to be paid out even if her father is dead. And the point is, even though the pasuk mentions her father, it doesn't mean that it wouldn't apply to a yisaima. It means, in other words, that the knas goes to her father if he's alive. If not, then it goes to her. So now the same thing should apply to Motzi Shemra. Why all of a sudden, by Motzi Shemra, are we saying that if there's no father, then he's potter altogether? Why don't we say that he should have to pay the same way as he should have to pay in the case of onus and mefata, where he'd be paying it to the girl herself? An interesting side point in that connection, which Marsha points out, one second, by mefata, why would he be paying her anyway? We learned earlier that since the mefata voluntarily agreed to have relations with him, then in effect she was moichel on the whole thing. It's one thing if her father is alive, she doesn't have the ability to be moichel, a claim that her father could make, but if she's a yisoma, why is he paying her anything anyway? And so he brings a couple of possibilities from the Rishon. One is that we could be talking about where she's a katana. Now we learned in the previous perek that the chachamim disagree with her mayor and say that this whole concept of onus and mefata applies to a katana as well. Well, a katana doesn't really have the ability to be moichel. So therefore, in her case, in effect, it would be considered onus, and therefore we would still. Therefore we would still say that he has to pay. That's the Ramban says that in Milchomos. Then on the other hand, he's arguing with the Balamur, who says that really fundamentally we're not talking about Mefata at all. We're really talking about Onus. We're just saying that since Onus and Mefata in many ways, we learn one from the other, so in principle the same din would apply by Mefata, but in practice it doesn't because she's Moichel on it. But other than that, we would say that we learn one from the other, which is how the Balamur learns it. Anyway, the point is, why is it over there that we're saying, Rabbi Yosef Lumi is saying that the word aviha doesn't have to mean that if there's no father, then there's no knas at all. It means there's a knas, it just doesn't go to her, it doesn't go to her father because he's dead, so instead it goes to her. So why by Motzi Shemra would we say differently, that if she's Yisoma, why would we be saying that he's potter? And the answer is, who most of Bavu and Farifa, so Rabbi Yossi Bar Oven, or Rabbi Yossi Bar Zvida, had asked the question, he also answered it, that the case is, Bavala Vahakaf Nisiasma. The case is that if he first had relations with her, and later on she was orphaned, that's when we would say that since her father was alive at the time, then therefore he'd have to be paid in the knas. But in fact, the fact that it says the father, both in the case of Onus and in the case of Motzi Shemra, it would mean that in fact, if she was a Yisoma at the time of the event, then in fact he would be potter. So the word Aviha is meant to tell us that if there's no Aviha, then he'd be potter. But on the other hand, we're saying that if the Onus or the marriage took place when the father was alive and afterwards he died, then yes, the din would still apply. On the other hand, Rava argues with the whole premise. He says chayev. He says either way, he's chayev. There's no such thing that he's potter because she's a yisoma. And therefore be consistent with onus, just like by onus, we said it doesn't matter whether the father's alive or not. Either way, he's paying her the knas, and maybe even by mefata as well, like we just talked about. So the same thing would apply by Motzi Shemra. And where does Rava get that from? Midatani Ami, the Sovas Yisrael, below the Sovas Gerim. Because Ami taught a Braisa that says, when the Pasuk says that the husband gets punished with all these consequences because he was Motzi Shemra, on a besula of the Jewish people, that comes to exclude a besula of gerim. As we said in the Mishnah, that if she's a geyoris, then these dinim don't apply. Now, in effect, a geyoris is considered like she's fatherless, because after all, her father is not considered her father in halacha. We say that the child of a goy is not really mesiachis after him in halacha. Tosfos points out it's not really when they're all goyim then it does. We actually find other gemaras that say that a goy is mesiachis after his father, which is relevant as far as certain dinim. It means that in Torah he yarshins his father. It means various other things. We learn that from the fact that the gemara in Kedushin learns it from the fact that it says that the children of Esav and the children of Ammon and Moab yarshin from their ancestors. There's also the fact that Gemara explains elsewhere. There's a few places in Tanakh where it mentions certain goyim and identifies them by their name and their father's name, showing that they have yichus to their father. But here we're talking about she's a geyoris, and gerushin is gai. Cotton shenel of dummy. So yeah, therefore we say that she's not considered to have a relationship, mahalacha, with her father, even though he is her biological father. So now, Rava says, so if you tell me that in the parallel case with a Jewish girl whose father is dead, then we would say that nevertheless the Motzi Shemra, that her husband, is still Chayev, then that would explain why you need a pasuk to tell us, on the other hand, if she's a Geyoris and she's not considered to have a father in Halacha, then these dinim don't apply. Ella, but if you tell me that in such a case, even by Yisrael, he'd be potter, like you, Rav Yosi B'Chanina are saying, then why do you even need a posse to exclude Gerim? Hash to be Yisrael potter, but goyim yiboya. If you're telling me that by Yisrael he'd be potter, how much more so by a ger? So therefore, necessarily, Rava says, on the basis of that braisa, we have to say that if he was Motzi Shemra on a Yisoma, he is Chayev, and not like the distinction that Rav Yosi Ba'ovin or Rav Yosi Ba'zvida is making, whether her father was alive at the time of the accusation or not. No, it doesn't matter whether she's Yisoma or not. Either way, all the dinim of Motzi Shemra apply. The din of giving her skila, if it turns out that his accusation was true, except as we said in the Mishnah, there's no Pesach Be'Sabia because her father's dead. And the fact that he pays the knas and gets malchus and so forth if it turns out that his accusation was false. Okay. Another point, the Gemara says, further on this topic of Motzi Shemra, Omer Shlokish, Motzi Shemra la Ktana Potter. If the girl was married as a Ktana, and he's Motzi Shemra, and saying that during the Erosin she was Mizana, then he would be Potter from the consequences, even if it turns out that his Adam were false. When she was married as a Ktana, we mean that she was married off by her father, because as we learned in Yevamos, if she was married off as a Ktana by anybody else, then the marriage exists only to Rabbanan anyway. Because the pasuk says you should give the money to the father of the girl, which means naira and naira mali gibra kosev. And here the pasuk spells out the word naira in full, as we learned the other day. Usually in the Torah, when it speaks of a naira, it usually leaves off the hay at the end. Here it puts it on, showing that it has to be a full fledged naira. So narakta. So the Gemara says maskiflor of achaba abba. And by the way, there is discussion on the point. There is discussion on the point. Even though we're saying that the money goes to her father, really what it is that the father is meant to keep it in. We talked about this the other day in a different context. The father is really supposed to keep it in trust for her. We're not saying that it becomes part of his property and it just becomes part of his estate and she sees nothing of it. Ultimately, it is meant to go to her because she's a Naira, then therefore he holds it in trust for her, and eventually he'll give it to her. The point being, in other words, that her husband has no right to that money because it was brought about by his false accusation. Normally, whatever property a wife has in the marriage is jointly owned with her husband. It's nichsim alogu, nichsitzayin bazel, as the case may be. Here we would say that the husband has no right to it at all, and the father keeps it in trust for her. Anyway, so we're saying that if she's a Ktana, then Rav Shlokish is saying that these dinim don't apply. Because Venos no labi on Naira, and the word Naira is spelt in full. So the Gemara says, Maski sort of Achaba Abba. Sort of Achaba Abba says, one second, time of Yaksiv Bahan Naira. So you're telling me the reason why the husband is Potter is only because it says Hanaira in full. What if not? You would think then though that all these dinim apply even if she's a ktana. But the pasuk continues. After all, the pasuk continues that if it comes out that it's true and she wasn't a basula, meaning that she was mezana during the erusin, then we take her out the door of her father's house and give her skila. Obviously, you don't give skila to a ktana. You don't give skila to a ktana, so necessarily the pasuk has to be talking about where she's a naira and therefore is of the age to punishment, is of the age to be punished. So in other words, why would we even need the pasuk to be telling us naira with a hay in order to teach us that din? It has to be that we're talking about a naira. Ella, no. We have to explain what Rish Lakish is saying a little different. Can Naira, here specifically, it says Naira, to tell us it's not Loy Lamed al Atzmei Ba, Ella Lamed al Aklau Kulo Yotza. It means, it comes to teach us that every other place in the Torah, Kol Mokum, Shenema Naira, after the Ketan of Amashma, every other place in the Torah where it uses the word Naira and spells it without the hay, then it does include a katana as well, meaning that we learned the other day, we had a machlot, the Shabmeir and the Chachamim, as far as Onus and the Fata, whether it applies to a katana. And Reb Meir had said no, so now the Shlokish is telling us why did the Chachamim say that yes, it applies to a katana as well, because by those it says the word Naira and it spells it without the hay. So the implication is in the one case where it spells it with a hay, necessarily it has to be a gdola, because we're saying if it was a kana, then we wouldn't give her skila. So therefore, that teaches us in turn, that every other place, since it doesn't spell it like that, then it means it includes a katana as well. Sure. And Tosfos points out, Reb Meir would have agreed to that as well, except that he has a different pasuk that implies that she has to be a naira, she has to be of the age to be able to accept kedushin on her own behalf.
If it's not spelled with a
hay, it means it's spelled just nun ayin rich. It's spelled as if it said na'ar, which we said the other day, Reb Shamshon Afral Hirsch says on that, why does the Torah pick that way to say that na'ar is nektana? Because then it's spelled as if it was the word na'ar, which means a young boy. So we're talking about an age where the shape of the body is pretty much the same between a boy and a girl, as opposed to a naira who already starts looking different. But that's the point. In other words, in the one place, it's spelt full to teach us that concept, and then it teaches us, so it's not l'lamed al atzmai, because atzmai itself, we would know that she has to be a naira in order for the skila to take effect, but it teaches us that every other place where it says naira without a hay, then it means it applies to a katana as well.